I'm very pleased to welcome you here. I would like to thank in particular our guests, Chris, sitting here, and Peter, whom you recognize from last year, who have come with their charming wives, Linda and Patty, for sitting with us. And we're very pleased that they managed to get to come and see us and spend the weekend in Barcarolle with us. So thank you very much for them to have made all this effort to come. Apparently they had a bit of a rest, so they should be able to stay awake with us the whole evening. What I would like to do is, before we start, I would like to thank a few friends amongst us, those who have helped organize our event. And I would like to thank in particular Wendy, Guillaume, who has been kind enough to pick up our friends at the airport. I would like to thank also Sharon, and I'm sorry if I have not, Philip also helped, and others who might be of help. And I'm not, of course, forgetting our very dear friend, Julia. A big round of applause. Without her, this event could not have been organized, and thanks very much to Julia for all the efforts she made. And I ask you a favor, if you need anything, Julia has done enough to prepare this thing. So why don't you direct your questions to me, or to Wendy, or to Sharon, but please spare Julia, okay? So otherwise, I would like just to tell you a few details. We're going to listen to Chris now during approximately an hour. And then, as you know, we start our convention tomorrow at 10 a.m. in Barcarolle. For those of you who still don't know exactly the way, please ask me, or Wendy, or Tina, or Sandro. Sandro, thank you also very much for participating in the organization, together with the rest of the team. So you ask them if you need to know how to get there. Otherwise, I think it's time for me to shut up and to leave the floor to our friend Chris. Thank you, folks.
My name's Chris Raymer, very grateful recovered alcoholic. Can y'all hear me okay? My head's full from the flight, and it just never cleared, so it sounds like I'm talking in a cave. And so if I start to get kind of quiet, it sounds like I'm screaming. Hold my call. There you go. No matter where you speak, there's always one. There you go. You got it? That's okay. I'm from Ingram, Texas, which is a million miles from here. Not just in miles, guys. I mean, we are on a different planet. I mean, this Ingram, Texas, little country, little town down there, kind of San Antonio in Texas. I was raised around the Texas Hill Country, and I started drinking in the Texas Hill Country, and I finished there myself. I cannot tell you how overwhelmed I am by this event, this coming to Switzerland. You know, you see pictures from the time you're kids in Switzerland. You're never going to go there. There's no reason. It's what the heck? What am I going to do? And then here I am, and I'm honored. I'm so grateful for George and his absolute unbelievable generosity of helping us get here, and Julia and just anybody that had anything to do with this, thanks so much. Peter and I are going to share tomorrow. We're going to do little workshops and talk about some stuff that is pretty near and dear to us about this fellowship. And I want to tell you a little bit about my story tonight so you kind of know what I'm about. And some of you probably won't come back tomorrow because of it. But I think that's okay too. I think I got sober in 1987, and I'm what they call, I don't know if they do here, but in the States, they call us chronic relapsers. I was one of those cats that I was trying to quit from almost the time I started. I started having problems with this stuff, and it took me a long time of actively. I was 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous trying to get well and couldn't. And today I do clerical work in a big treatment center down in the Hill Country where we treat alcoholism and drug addiction. And I get to witness thousands of alcoholics and addicts come through that hospital. And I watch a lot of those people have had the same experience I've had in getting sober. And it's really frustrating because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written in such a way where it tells you on the title page that you can recover from this. And my story is that I never heard that message all those 7 years that I was in the program up to the point I finally landed in the right room. And so this sometimes when I speak, and I speak a lot out in public, I come across as a bit on the controversial side. It sounds like I'm taking AA's inventory, and I suppose I am. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love being sober, and I've got a great life today because of it. But I watch so many people struggle with this. You know, it's like whether it's the alcohol or the drugs. I'm sure we have some little drug addicts that snuck in and too. And it's like, whatever it is, I mean, we have a solution that works. And it's just there's so much misunderstanding about what that solution is. Because a lot of people want to share a thing that I think is kind of dangerous in our fellowship, and it's called opinions. Well, this is what I think. You know, well, this is what my treatment center said. Well, this is what my sponsor said. You know, and I get a little frustrated with it. I mean, I'm pretty passionate about recovery, folks. But I can absolutely pull my hair out when I start hearing people share this stuff, because we've got a solution and I've had it for 70 years. It's called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you haven't gathered by now, I'm a big book thumper. And if you're not, buddy, that's okay. The water's great. You know, the company's bar none, and y'all are so welcome. You're just not going to like what I've got to say. And my sponsor said, you know, if you can't reconcile it with what's in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you might hold it suspect at best. You might choose to take it with a grain of salt, as they say. So y'all can do the same thing. I'm not here to convert anybody to Big Book thumperdom or anything of that nature. If going to meetings and just not drinking is working for you, and you're happy, joyous, and free, and you're putting some sobriety together, rock on. I mean, have a great life. Just don't sponsor anybody. maybe we can go there. I got to tell you, we took a boat ride. We took a boat ride from wherever the heck we're staying. I'm sorry. And we took a boat ride across the lake. What a gorgeous. I mean, it's breathtaking. It's like a fairyland over here. I love you. It was so good. We all get off the boat. We're all combing our hair, and my patch just flapping in the breeze, you know. And Peter gets off, you know, it's just not a hair untouched. He's just still. We always make jokes about Peter's hair. It's just he's been my hair sponsor for years. I'm improving, you know. But it's going to be fun tomorrow getting to share the podium with him. And we've done it often, and I'm excited about being here. I started drinking in a, like I said, a little small town. This is like the Appalachia of Texas. I mean, it is, y'all would hate it. And the food would probably kill you. But y'all are welcome to come visit anytime. I don't know why you'd want to, but you're welcome. But I wanted to be a professional chef all my life. I was fortunate to work at a hotel who had a Swiss chef. The cat had come from Houston, and he'd sort of, quote-unquote, retired to the Hill Country, and he'd started this hotel in this restaurant, and I worked for him as a busboy there, and this guy was so cool. I can't wait to tell him I finally got to see Switzerland, but I found that I had a pretty good talent for that line of work, and I progressed, and I went to Houston, and he got me a job at the Warwick Hotel there in Houston, Texas, and I was an apprentice there, and we had nothing but Europeans in that hotel, and I was so fortunate to get to work with Europeans, and I became quite good at what I did. There was this little drinky thing, you know, because I don't know if y'all understand this, but in the food business, it's just they just look the other way. We don't care how much you drink. You requisition stuff from the storeroom, get you a case of beer, buddy. Go ahead. As long as the job gets done, we look the other way. It's okay. It worked great for me. I had a little German cook that took me under his wing, and he was a brutal alcoholic. And I would smuggle him booze in my toolkit, and we hit it off great, and he helped my career. I think I helped kill him. I was one of these alcoholics. We call them in the United States, we call them functioning alcoholics. And I know that some of y'all are like that. I was not a low bottom drunk. Towards the end, it got very low. But for most of my 20-year drinking and later drugging career, I was a functioning alcoholic. I wasn't going to jail. I wasn't blacking out. I was going to work every day in the kitchens, coming home, drinking myself spitless, and getting up and doing it again the next day. People knew I drank. They were amazed a little skinny guy could drink as much as me. That should have been my first indication that there was trouble on the horizon. But I just didn't experience a lot. My father was an alcoholic. He was a periodic. And we know today that alcoholism and drug addiction is genetic. And that is a fact, folks. It is not a theory. Up to about 7 years ago, before we got, since in the advent of the MRI and the CAT scans, we know today, without a shadow of a doubt, we are truly wired different than normal drinkers and druggers. And I don't know. My twin brother was an alcoholic just like me. I've got a little sister that was raised in the same family that's never had a problem with alcohol. In fact, she freaks us out. I mean, we'll get her a glass of wine. Lisa, you want a glass of wine? And she'll drink it. She'll set it down and slide it across. You know, Lisa, what's wrong with the wine? What's that? She's all, it tastes a bit off. Off? I don't care if there's a dead cricket floating in it. You know, I mean, because I'm not drinking for the taste of the legs. Ooh, look at the color. I could give a rat's butt. You know, I mean, I'm drinking for what the book calls the effect produced by the chemical. And I start to drink that stuff, and this little thing in me called a spiritual malady, I didn't know that's what it was. I mean, hindsight, you know, I'm sober 18 years. I look back, that's what it was. The spiritual malady gets treated when I put alcohol in my body. And that's why I drink. The problem is that physically I have this phenomenon called craving. So at certain times, I overdrink. They got that control thing. Tomorrow when we talk about qualifying the alcoholic, we're going to talk a lot about that. But I had these symptoms and I knew intuitively that I had a problem with this stuff. But I wasn't getting in a lot of trouble, so I didn't take it quite as seriously as some of the people around me. People just got tired of messing with me. They just left. And that's good for you. You know, that's just the way it was. I started seeing a psychiatrist early on in the late 70s. Not for my drinking, but for my depression. I found that when I drank, the depression would lift, but when I didn't drink, the depression was on me. And it was very frustrating because I didn't have a problem stopping drinking. I could stop on a dime. If the woman was good looking enough, you know, I'd stop quick. Months I would stop. And then I would inevitably start again. And that was the grinder. But I'm seeing a therapist for this depression. And I'm bored and I can't seem to focus. And they are doing what psychiatrists do in the States. They get the prescription pad out. We can fix that. And they're writing prescripts by the handfuls. And I'm moving around a lot because I'm in the food business. It's perfectly acceptable. And dang it, every place I go, I don't care where I always end up there, and I'm the problem. But I'm blaming everybody around me, and I have this idea, as do the therapists, that if I can arrange my life and finally get some stuff straightened out, that I'll be okay inside. And that's perfectly logical. In the treatment center industry, which I could go on about for a decade, that's a huge thing to talk about. Why are you drinking? It's not because you're an alcoholic, it's because you were abused as a child, or because you were mistreated, or because you're black, or because you were I don't know. But we looked at all of that. It was so frustrating to me because I was diligent with my therapy, and I was diligent with my medication, but I'm still drinking. You know, y'all follow it? If I could just make such and such amount of money, if I could just get to this hotel, if I could just get to be a sous chef, if I could just get to be the tournade, if I could just get, what? It didn't matter because I would get there. You know how God works with us. You know, boom, we get there. If I could just marry that woman. You know, I can remember 2 weeks after I married my first wife, and I'm watching her shovel those Cheerios in her mouth, and I'm saying, you know, God, if I could just kill this woman, everything would be okay. It's just, we're... After a while, and some of y'all can relate to this, of trying to organize your life so that you can finally be comfortable inside and drink like a gentleman, you just give up. You get hopeless. In the early 80s, that's where I was, and I had added some outside issues to my drinking. It was in the form of cocaine. I'll say that for singleness of purpose. And it really just complicated the daylight out of my life. And first wife said, "You quit drinking or I'm done." And I quit drinking for 2 weeks. Then I had one beer and came home, and she smelled it, went to the bathroom, packed, left. She was done. And I blamed her for the next 7 years for my continued drinking. One of the things that happened with her divorcing me was that I ended up in an AA meeting. And this is where it always gets controversial for people, because I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, because you may have ended up in these same kind of meetings and stayed sober in them, but I didn't. The Icelandic guys call them dark tunnel meetings. And they're all the same. They're called open discussion meetings. And where you go and you talk about your day and the cat and the traffic and the job, whatever you want to talk about. And at the end, you know, we keep coming back. It works if you work it and you leave. But you see, I've got a fatal progressive illness, folks, and I'm dying here, you know. And in the first few weeks in AA, it was a very amusing, at least, to listen to you and your life and your story and how you got to be such a cosmopolitan dog. You know, I mean, that really, I got to talk to you. GQ, all the way. This is a great guy. And I was pulling my hair out. After about 2 weeks of listening to this crap, I'm going crazy, you know, because I'm not stopping drinking. And if we weren't talking about the problem, we were talking about the war story. It's like it's this endless litany of war stories. And I hit this so hard because I hear the patients coming into our hospital complaining about the same thing. If I have to go back to one of those AA meetings and listen to those war stories, I wanted to drink worse when I left than I did when I got there. You'll follow us? The literature in Alcoholics Anonymous is very clear. In the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't share war stories. They shared war stories, and it's such a valuable thing that we have in a thing called a 12-step call. I catch you out there on the park bench, and you're drunk on your butt, you know, and I talk to you, see if you want to stop drinking, and I share some stories to get you comfortable, and we visit and bond a little bit, and then I drag your butt to a meeting. Y'all with us on that? And then we hear some solutions, like how to work the 12 steps and have a spiritual experience that will remove the obsession to drink forever. What a cool concept. But we didn't do that. In the meetings that I was going to up in North Texas, all we did was talk about war stories, try to scare each other into recovery, and whine about our day. Folks, I'm going to say this real hard. I'm going to try not to speak in tongues when I say it. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. Therapy is therapy, and it's a good thing to have. I think if anybody can afford it, you do it. It's a wonderful opportunity to get to know some things about yourself. But I'm going to tell you, coming into an AA meeting and expecting a room full of people to fix my problems is, I'll say this, it's selfish at best. We got a little alcoholic, and he comes in the back room, and he's shaking, he's coming apart, and he's in DTs, and we're going to talk about our divorce one more time. It makes me want to scream. Could we come early and talk about the divorce? Yes. I did and do. Can we stay late afterwards and go to coffee and go to dinner in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous? Talk about all that? Absolutely. But why is it, guys, that we got to take 1 hour a day in our meetings and waste it talking about that? And I know some of y'all in here don't agree with that. If I couldn't talk about my... I'm saying, if it works for you, find those meetings. But I'm telling you, after 7 years of that stuff, I looked in the mirror one day and said, I'm never going back. And that's my experience. 1987, I'm living with my twin brother. He's got a little apartment he's put me up in, and I'm working in. He's got a book bindery, and it's a craft bindery, and I'm working for him. And I picked up a stack of return checks one afternoon and got a 12-pack of beer and went home and opened all those return checks. And I'm 35 years old, and I realize that I have bankrupted another bank account, and then I'm going to have to go to my family tomorrow and ask for some money. I can't cook in the industry anymore because I can't hold a knife. I am physically and mentally dying. I am psychotic. I'm hearing stuff, and I'm doing that on 7 pills a day that the doctors have prescribed for me. all legitimately, folks. They're trying to help me. What they don't understand is the problem with Chris Raymer is he's an alcoholic. He's not bipolar. He's not manic depressive. He's not all of this other stuff that we're being medicated for. I know some people need that. I didn't. I was misdiagnosed. I got up off the floor in a very, you know, people, I know we probably have some people in here that are not alcoholic or addicts, and maybe some family members snuck in, but I got to tell you, I know it's frustrating. I hope they did. I hope it's frustrating to, I know, to watch us do what we do, to self-destruct ourselves, but you know, to be in it, to tell your families that you're going to stop and then let them down, oh, a few thousand times. I mean, after a period of time, many of us get to a place of absolute hopelessness. And, you know, I was just out of plans. There was no more woman I could stick for money. There's no more deal to be done to get me out of the jam I was in. I was broke, and I was sick, and I was very tired of living. And I went to the medicine cabinet, I pulled out a couple of bottles of pills and tried to commit suicide. No romantic nonsense about it. It's the absolute coward's way out. But that's where I was. November 13th, 1987. It was a Friday the 13th. And I took about the time those pills hit my throat, I heard a voice that night that said, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." Freaked me out. I'm living in a little apartment about the size of this table. You know, I mean, it's not like somebody could be hiding in my house. You know, you can see the house from my mirror. You know, and it's like there's nobody there. I heard the voice two times, three times that night. It said, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." Was it in my head? I don't know what it was, guys. I believe it was a power greater than myself saving my skinny little butt one more time. I made myself sick. The next morning I came to, and I heard the voice one more time. Same voice, "Chris, don't do this, go back to AA." And I'm arguing with the voice, guys. No, listen, you want me to shave my head and go to Africa and be a missionary? I'm your man. I'll do that. What do you want me to... I've done everything. I ain't going back to AA. It doesn't work. "Chris, don't do this, go back to AA." Okay. I went to a doctor that day and got some doggy downers to detox. And at 6 o'clock that night, I walked in the back door of an AA meeting. I knew where this meeting was. I'd never been there before. But I knew I was running late at time. And I walked in the back door of this meeting, which I believe was one of my first spiritual experiences, because I did not want to go in that meeting. But I did it anyway. And I walked in the back door, and there must have been 40 people in that room. Can y'all smoke in meetings in Switzerland? Can y'all smoke in meetings? No? Well, back then in Texas, because everybody smoked, and you could smoke in meetings, and it was like, you just walk in and you could see the ceiling dropping, you know, as the smoke haze dropped down, everybody crouching. It was unbelievable. There was 40 people, and they all had two or three cigarettes sticking out of their mouth. That's the way it was. And they all had a big book in their lap. And I remember walking in and going, "Oh man," I said, "all the meetings to go to, I had to land in a nest of big book thumpers." You know, it's just, there's 1,500 meetings in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at the time. 1,500 meetings a week, and I ended up in this one. And I know today it was absolute spiritual intervention. And I walked in the back door, and they were laughing, and I didn't like that. You know how bad, when you feel bad, you want everybody else to feel bad? So it was just, I hated them. And I started to back out. This little 19-year-old girl got between me and the door and wouldn't let me out. And I'm about 40 pounds, like more, right? It's all right here. My kidneys and liver's going, and I'm, you know, big full beard and patches. My patch is perpetually crooked. It looks like I wear an earmuff. You know, I look like hell, you know, and I walk in, and this little girl, this 19-year-old girl, all cleaned up, spiffy, and she hooks her finger in my belt loop. And she knows I'm walking out because she's not stupid. I learned later that her sponsor said, "Get him," and she did. Sponsor couldn't get to me. But I mean, the courage of this little girl to do this. And she set me down in a chair and patted my leg and got me a cup of coffee and a roll of paper towels to clean up the mess, because I'm detoxed and I can't hold a paper cup. And they went around the room that night. I committed. I'm going to stay for an hour. What the hell? What could happen? A lot could happen. They went around the room and they shared some miracles with me. The chairperson gave them instructions, which was unheard of. It wasn't, well, who's got the problem? They said, hey, we got a newcomer in here. Guy's been around the fellowship for years. He's dying. Can we share some hope with him? And they went around the room and they each shared some stuff that I could relate to. They didn't talk about little sunbeams for Jesus and stuff, folks. They talked about stuff I could relate to. Not knocking that. They talked about getting credit cards back. Huh? Remember credit cards? Yeah. I'd lost mine years ago. They talked about buying houses and being in cool relationships and having some real friends. And they talked about having a car with a license plate and car tags and insurance. I mean, it just takes my breath away to think about it. You know, I mean, this was stuff that was just so far gone from me. At the end of a meeting, the guy got up and he says, Chris, he said, welcome. I picked up a little desire chip and he says, are you ready to stay sober for good and for all? I made the biggest mistake I'd made that night. I said, well, you know, one day at a time. I know this grinds some of you, but our literature doesn't say we stay sober one day at a time. Our literature says we make a commitment that we're ready to do this. I know that I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow. I may be drunk. With God's help, I'll stay sober. But I don't make a choice on a daily basis whether I'm going to stay sober, because my book clearly states I've lost the power of choice. I'm insane around the alcohol. But it starts with a commitment. Are you done? This is a problem in our fellowship, and we're going to hit it hard tomorrow in these workshops. We've gotten away from that. We think this is some kind of a social event. If you're not done, go drink. Finish the job. When you get ready to do what we're asking you to do, you'll get sober. We'll get success rates back up where they're supposed to be. Anyway, this guy says, that's what I thought. The conversation was over. I chased after him and he explained this to me, this one day at a time thing. And I asked him to ask me again and he says, are you ready to stay sober for good and for all? Are you ready to try this for keeps? I said, yes. He hugged my neck. The next morning, I heard a knock on the door. Oh, man. I'd already decided I wasn't going to go back to that meeting. I was going to go Sunday. You know, because I'm detoxing and I need a little time to chill, watch TV a little bit. I'm not feeling good. They followed me home the night before, unbeknownst to me. Because they knew that I was going to crawfish, you know. And they said, let's go. And I said, nah, I don't think so. And they said, yeah, I think so. And let's go. And I said, well, at least let me take my car. You know, so I followed them down. And we went to a meeting. Here's where it gets interesting. We went to a meeting, and then after the meeting, we got the old-timers opened it up and they qualified me for the first time in 7 years to see if I was really an alcoholic. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And they took me in the back room and we got on our knees and I did a third-step prayer. And then we went to lunch and came back and they gave me a notebook with some paper on it and they drew some lines on there and it says, let's show you how to start on your fourth step. Now, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years and a bunch of people that said they loved me never allowed me to work one step. And now I'm in AA for 2 days, and I'm already working on a fourth step. Because these people knew what the book intended for us to do. They knew that I had a spiritual malady that was going to kick my butt, and the obsession was going to return, and I was going to drink again. They had to get me connected to God quickly. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. It's a spiritual program of action. That's a fact, folks. You can treat it as a self-help program if you want, and you're going to get the same results. I can't fix myself. That's why I need the spiritual experience. I love those guys. I'm going to tell you, I landed finally in a room full of people that loved me enough to tell me the truth. And they didn't give me a rat's butt if they hurt my feelings or not. They weren't being rough with me. I make it sound like they were so terrible. They were very directional. And I needed that. We often put this back on the newcomer. People come up after I speak and they want to take exception. Well, Chris, you know, if you really wanted to stay sober in those 7 years, you could have stayed sober. I mean, you could have asked the questions. What questions were those I was supposed to ask? I don't even know where the bathroom is, for Christ's sake. And you want me to ask you the right questions? That's ridiculous. It's our job to teach. Finally, in 1987, I landed in a room full of people that knew that. And the entire group took me under their wings. And they showed me how to do the rest of the steps. 2 weeks after I had my suicide attempt, I've got a completed four step, and I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck in the same apartment complex where I tried to off myself, and I realize that the obsession to use is lifted. Same apartment complex, we were talking about it today. Same apartment complex that I was doing all the cocaine and drinking all the alcohol in. But I'm in the same complex, but something shifted. Because I've gotten off my butt for the first time in this fellowship and actually started doing something. I'd had a spiritual experience with the obsession to use lifted. And folks, I'm going to tell you, that was 18 years ago, and not once in 18 years has the obsession to drink and drug returned to me. And I'm a cat that could not not drink. And I know that story is different for you. I know some of y'all in this room right now have been around Alcoholics Anonymous for years and years and years, and you still have moments where you want to drink. I'm sorry, that's wrong. That's not a recovered alcoholic. The book is quite clear. If you can't be around it, you're not recovered. My sponsor says, how free do you want to be? I got the same sponsor Peter does. How free do you want to be? You want to be free today? You want to be free the rest of your life? That's where I come from, folks. That's where my passion comes from. Because I have watched thousands of alcoholics and addicts finally catch fire with this thing and get with a sponsor that understands what's in this book, go through the 12 steps rapidly and have barn-burning spiritual experiences. And the obsession to eat those pills or smoke pot or drink or do cocaine or whatever it is leaves them. That's what a recovered alcoholic is. Chris, you're so offensive. Everybody knows you'll always be recovering. That's what treatment centers teach you. That's not what the literature teaches you. Make sense? The problem, 70 years ago, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob got together. They couldn't stop drinking. They worked for many, many months on making some changes in the way they were doing things so that they could get some maximum benefit and help alcoholics achieve sobriety, permanent sobriety. Today, what we want to do is we want to take those same 12 steps and put our own twist on it. Well, I think you should do it this way. Well, I think you should do it that way. What's wrong with doing it the way the big book outlines? Make sense? I was in Detroit a couple of weeks ago, and a guy comes up and says, well, we do a four-step where we list every person we've ever known in our entire life on a four-step. I said, how many names did you have on your resentment inventory? He said, 1,100. I said, buddy, I'm going to tell you, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't even zip my own pants, much less figure out, this is ridiculous. Go to a newcomer and ask him to do this big feat. Guys, the original four-step was in such a form that you could do it in a couple of hours on the back of an envelope. It's a fact-finding mission. It is not unbelievable, the misunderstanding about our fellowship. No wonder people get frustrated and quit. I got off the plane in Denmark a couple of years ago, and our host, I'm out there trying to regain consciousness and smoking a butt, and our host comes up and says, Chris, what do you think about the German method? Y'all know the German method? Well, y'all, I'm fixing to explain it. Y'all should. If you want to kill people, go right ahead. Here. I said, I don't know, bud. Let me settle a minute here. I'll get right back to you on that one. And I'm driving, and this new driver comes in and says, well, Chris, what do you think about the German method? I said, dang. I finally get with my host, and I said, buddy, you got to fill me in, because I've been around the fellowship for 20 years. I don't have the German method. He says, yeah, this is what they do. And I don't know if they do or not, because I've never been to Germany. But this is what they said. You come into the fellowship, and you chill your jets for a year. You get your feet underneath you. You go to meetings. You just don't drink. And then at the end of a year, they'll start working you through the steps, one step a year. One step a month, excuse me. So I said, let me get this straight. So I come in, and 2 years later, I'm going to work the 12 steps that guarantee me the spiritual experience. Guys, if I could stay sober 2 years, why in the hell do I need you? My book says on page 34, if you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis, you're not one of us. The German method. You could take that and hang it. I said, it freaks. What's wrong with doing just exactly what the book says do? Those guys had me doing 12-step work the first 2 weeks I was sober. They didn't have me leading big book workshops and stuff, folks, but they had me participating. Help us chair the meeting. Help us make the coffee. Answer the phones for us. They gave me jobs so that I would stay and feel a part of the group instead of just patting me on the ass and telling me to keep coming back. We kill a lot of people with that crap, folks. It's not about just keep coming back. It's big in Texas. That's the big saying with everybody. I'm sure y'all do it here. They've got people tell the newcomer, just don't drink and go to meetings and you're going to be okay. I'm sorry. That's not my experience. Not my experience at all. Not with a real alcoholic. You just keep coming to meetings? I had to go into meetings down, brother. You know, I mean, I'm 90 meetings in 90 days. I'm a meeting maker fool. It was the not drinking between the meetings that I was having a little trouble with. You'll see where I'm at with that? Again, all of this comes from people's opinions because it's not in the big book. Tomorrow, we're going to hit it hard with this stuff in the treatment centers and the damage done by people that should know better and don't. Sat on that tailgate of my truck in North Texas, realized that the obsession to drink had been lifted. Went up to my apartment, cranked up some hot jazz, listened to some rock and roll, washed the dishes, and was free. That was the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life, was that obsession lifting from me. And that has a direct result of me getting off my butt and participating in my own recovery. And I've been so blessed for the last 18 years to be able to be around this our treatment industry and an active member in our fellowship. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and also Cocaine Anonymous. And I'm so honored to be a part of those fellowships. That's what it's about. Let me tell you this. Let me give you an analogy real quick and I'll let you guys go. Swiss are big pharmaceutical country. Y'all will probably come up with this. The Swiss will invent a pill for the uglies. I can see it on the horizon. You with me? Thinking about this coming over. Eat this pill and you're instantly not ugly anymore. And some of y'all in here don't need that medication. Some of y'all desperately need this medication. But it's worked. The side effects are a little rough and it's tough to take. But it works 100% of the time. You with us? But there's only a small market for that medication because there's not that many ugly people out there. There's a lot of homely people out there. You with us? So we're going to fix this medication. But the homely people don't want to take this medication because it's too rigid. It's too hard to take. You with us? So we're going to revamp this medication and we're going to knock it down a few notches so that the homely people will find it palatable and they can take it. And all of a sudden, it's treating homely people like you wouldn't believe. But you know, by making this a weaker medication, it won't work for the ugly people anymore. You're down with this? This is exactly what I'm saying is going on in Alcoholics Anonymous today. We're so damn concerned about upsetting somebody. We're so concerned about scaring the newcomer off. We don't want to talk about God. We don't want to talk about the 12 steps. Oh, we don't want to do that. What do we want to do then? Sit on the sidelines and watch them drink and then blame them for why they relapsed? Come on, folks. Patty and I were talking about this earlier. It's a big soapbox of mine. In the great country that I live in, the United States, and I love my country, but it is unbelievably stupid sometimes. Take for instance, George Bush. I said it from the podium, and I don't care. He's from my state. I'll say what I want. In the United States, in the early 80s, we started seeing lawsuits trickle down through the ACLU around separation of church and state. People that were sentenced to alcoholics by well-meaning judges were digging in rigidly saying, you can't ask me to go to a fellowship where they talk about God. Because you're a federal arm of the government, and that's a spiritual entity, and you can't force me to do that. And you know, the legal guys won, and they won big time. And it coursed its way through the appellate courts and ended up in the Supreme Court in the late 90s. And we lost. And now what happens in the United States, and I don't have a clue how your government runs, obviously better than ours, but how it works in the United States is that if you have a treatment center that's state-funded, that has any federal funding, which are also the most reasonably priced treatment centers for the little knuckleheads coming off the street can go to, you can't talk about the 12 steps in those meetings. In those hospitals, you can't talk about God. You can talk about relapse triggers and all that Gorski crap, but you can't talk about God. You'll follow us? I hope Terrence Gorski's not in the audience. I'll be in trouble, but I'd like to meet him so I could tell him exactly what I think about his literature. But the sad part is there's so many people coming in now that are trying to get well that can't get well in these hospitals. Because my book says, when y'all read How It Works, it says, no human can relieve what's wrong with me, folks. And guys, we're just a group of humans. My AA group is not going to keep me sober. My church is not going to keep me sober. That treatment center is not going to keep me sober. My therapist is not going to keep me sober. Patty, as sweet as she is, not going to keep me sober. God, of my own understanding, keeps me sober. Because when the obsession to use returns, I'm going to go drink. You follow us? All of this to say this. The cats in the United States, what's happening now is we're seeing an influx of people walking back through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. For years what they did was, I need treatment. They took them to treatment, they got treatment, and maybe they did or maybe they didn't ever show up in Alcoholics Anonymous. But today, if they can't get well in the treatment centers, and they're not, they're coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why I'm so passionate from the podium for everybody in our fellowship to finally wake up and realize that each individual one of us in here has a sense of responsibility to carry a very clear message back to those alcoholics and addicts that are trying to get well. Can't you sense that responsibility? I mean, 70 years ago, guys, we were dying in insane asylums all over the world. And because a couple of guys got together and came up with these 12 steps, rigid in nature, albeit intended to be worked rapidly, they work 100% of the time. Don't know anybody that's ever worked the steps the way the book outlines that's relapsed. None. I know a lot of people that have done it their own way. I'm working my program my way. Lots of luck. All bets are off. It may work for you, but it probably won't work for the next cat. This works for every cat. Low bottom, high bottom, black, white, gay, straight, even Yankees. I'm telling you. Patty got sober 14 years now. Y'all cool with that? It's the greatest gift. I don't do much well, folks. I'm terrible with my finances. I'm not the healthiest bloke on the block. I'm, aside from stunning good looks and my ability to communicate from the podium about this message, that's about it. But I'm telling you, it's the greatest gift God ever gave me. Because each individual one of us, in our own way, I've said this from a million podiums, we don't need any more Chris Ramers. We don't need any more Georges. We got one. We need you. Your message, the way you carry it, in your tone, with these guidelines, can save somebody's life. And that's a sense of responsibility that I take to sleep with me every night and wake up with it every morning. What an honor to be able to do that. My mom always asked me, she says, Chris, we told her when we were going to Switzerland, she says, Chris, I hope you have a nice time, but you're going to have to slow down. You're going to be in Switzerland this weekend and you're going to be in Alaska next weekend. I says, when is your debt to Alcoholics Anonymous going to be paid? You know? I said, but you see, Mom, bless her, she didn't know when I was eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. She didn't know when I was crying in that apartment by myself with a loaded gun. She did not know. I tell her, Sunday soon, Laura, bless you. She loves Alcoholics Anonymous. She doesn't understand. Not her place to understand. It's my place to understand. I have a sense of responsibility. When a hand reaches out, I'm supposed to be there, armed with the facts about myself, my story, and the information in this book. And I can alleviate death and untold hours of misery for individuals that we would never have crossed paths to that point. Let's stop watering the message down, folks. Let's get a whole bunch of us on the same page so that we can turn the tide, because it's coming, folks. Alcoholics Anonymous is going to be besieged again by massive numbers coming through the doors. And they don't need one or two of us doing the work. They need everybody here helping out where they can. You cats that helped organize this weekend, I want to thank you for doing it. Julia, thank you. You little worker bees. Thank you. But see, this is what it's about. The cats that brought the water in, the cats that are emptying the ashtrays, the cats that are making coffee, the cats that are spending way too much money buying me cigars. Thank you. I'm absolutely honored to be here. And Patty and I, we got to fly out because we work for a living. We had to fly out Sunday. I had to be at work on Monday. but I'm going to be around all day tomorrow and the rest of this evening. And I hope I get a chance to meet every one of you and hug your neck. And if I said something that offended you tonight or you didn't agree with, get over it. I don't know. No, come see me so I can make amends. Thank you very much.